Hello and welcome to Follow the Sound, and we are going to be doing another great album review for you today. I am hosting in place of our good, fearless leader, Brian Crock, today. My name is Greg Harvey, and I am joined with our excellent panel, of course, Jacob Crum.
Howdy.
Howdy. And we've got St. Louis's very own DJ from the St. Louis men's roller derby team, the St. Louis Gatekeepers. It's Lady Scratch.
Well, hi.
Hi. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we could not include you because I know that this album review we're doing today is a favorite both of Jacob's and Lady Scratch. Am I right?
It really is. And it's wonderful because I never get teased a lot of this music in my work. So it's really nice to be able to get to use it for the podcast.
You're telling me that, like, 11 minutes of ambient noise and double drum pedals doesn't make for good dance music?
Doesn't really flow well for the sports DJ kind of, trying to get you pumped up for your game type music.
Yep. So we got a special album picked out tonight. And Jacob, what do we got in store?
Oh, we have Tool's Lateralis. It's their third album. It was released after 4 years of legal battles with their own record label, and it was released in 2001. This is Tool's Lateralis.
Excellent. And what does this band, what does this album mean to you guys?
Gosh. I believe Lateralis was my first exposure to Tool, which seems a little late in the game, all things considered. I actually got to see them after this album came out, though, and just hearing it, I mean, like you said, there's some songs that are, you know, 11 minutes of ambient noise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's some songs that are 1 minute of intense lyrical depth, and it's so broad and vast, and it's not in like anything I'd ever heard before, which is what really turned me on to Tool, how unique Maynard's vocals and his lyrics are, you know, just their musical style in general, all of their timing.
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot of really cool stuff with their drums and their bass, and I think that's really interesting that they don't just keep the bass and the drum together. You know, they really are individualized musicians that have come together to really make this gorgeous orchestra of a band.
Okay, and so we'll be launching into the album here in just a moment, but you know, what's kind of the background of Tool for people like myself? You know, I know that Tool's a great band, and I've heard their music before, but I've never really been really deep in it and allowed myself to be a big fan. So hopefully today will kind of change that. But for people like me, you know, who is Tool?
Well, Tool is a four-piece. And see, you've already mentioned Maynard.
So Maynard James Keenan.
Maynard James Keenan and Dana Carey came from Green Jello. And
Green Jelly?
Dana Carey. Yeah. He's their drummer.
Yeah, Green Jelly, if you're not with the hip crowd, you know how to say it, right?
Yeah.
And then they were introduced to their guitar player, Adam Jones, through Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
Apparently, Adam Jones and Tom Morello, I think, went to high school or something. So
they went to high school?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine that?
Hey.
As if that's, yeah, okay. And then Justin Chandler, Chancellor.
Justin Chancellor.
Is their bass player. And they've, let's see, their first album was in 97?
98, maybe, yeah.
Hmm.
Well, like that.
Well, either way.
Well, and this album was released May 15th of 2001, so not the first time we've heard of Tool.
Right.
But let's go ahead, we'll jump into it. So what is our first track here?
So our first track here is The Grudge.
Calculate what we will not tolerate. control. All and everything unable to forgive the scarlet letter.
So our first track off the album here is called The Grudge. And, you know, there's additional 7 minutes to that track that we weren't able to play for you guys. So I tried to get in that first minute and a half so you could at least get an idea of it. But, boy, you know, from what I know about Tool, that was a pretty Tool track, I would say. The fact that it kind of starts out with the very ambient guitar with a lot of reverb on it and the drums kind of just kind of playing around and not even hard hitting, but just kind of, you know, bouncing around on the toms. And then when the vocals kick in and when it got really heavy there, everything about it was very Tool-esque. And the time changes. I know we're going to hear a lot of time changes, too, which is totally Tool. So what do you guys, how do you guys feel about this track?
At the beginning is an excellent start to a, to an album, I think, because it just brings you right in immediately to their style. You get that immediate Danny Carey is almost impossible to follow syncopation on his toms there, you know, and then everybody just comes in. I do say, I will say, I don't think that this beginning track and the starting vocals are really the best representation of Maynard's vocals. He's a lot heavier and growlier at the beginning of this song than I like his voice to be. But that's just personal preference on my part.
Well, the first two Tool albums were a little bit more of that. Now, I'm like, I wouldn't call it screamo, but
no, but he definitely had more of a like less melodic, of a singing than he has at the beginning of the song specifically. When we get later in the album, you'll hear a lot better representation of what I'm talking about as far as his lyrical, the use of melody and the way that he pronounces his lyrics. But that's just something that I thought was missing a little bit at the very beginning of an album. I would have liked to see that, but overall for an 8.5 minute song,
I like right off the bat, the part of the battles that they were having with the their label at the time was every band goes through, like, you know, artistic taste and battles of people want 4 minute tracks. They don't want 8.5 minute tracks to start off albums and things.
Yeah, it's hard to get behind an 8.5 minute song just ever.
Right.
At least not in this modern day, which you know, is part of the whole, like, can the album stand the test of time? Do people still have the patience for it? I think the answer is yes. I mean, how many Tool fans are out there, right? So they don't care how long the songs are. I think they'd like them to be as long as possible.
Right.
The more Tool, the better.
I think with a lot of Tool fans, one of our favorite things about their albums are that they're so perfectly crafted that you can listen to them from beginning to end, despite the fact that some songs are 11 minutes long and some songs are a minute 30. The beauty of the way that they produce their album and the order they put it in is very specific, and it's something that we all very much enjoy is that there aren't many albums anymore that you don't skip tracks on, at least one or two. And all of Tool's albums are produced in such a way that they flow together so beautifully, despite the fact that they're so different.
Yeah, this is definitely in that vein of, like, your Led Zeppelins, where the artists are constantly saying, no, 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 it should, every track should be listened to in the context of the entire album. But I think that there was some compromise on this one with the label, because there are two really short instrumental tracks that I suspect either have had more music possibly behind it or was attached to something else.
I'm sure.
And we're going to get into one of those right now.
Yep. Track two on the album is one of those instrumentals, only about a minute long. It's called Eon Blue Apocalypse, right here. Thank you. So that's track two on Tool's album review that we're doing here. And it's about to kick into the next song, essentially.
Yeah.
So that was it. And like you guys were saying, I think this track is clearly just kind of there to segue from one song to the other.
It is. And you'll really hear that once we get into the next song, how they really needed a track like that to do exactly what we were saying, is to be able to have it to be playable completely through because of how heavy The Grudge comes in. And then once we hear track three, The Patient, has a completely different vibe to it. This song almost starts out sounding like something's about to go down in a Tarantino movie, but then it kind of ambience out into the vibe of the next track. So, you know, it's, as we were saying, it's just one of those things that they kept in there because it sounds great and it's an excellent segue.
Here it is, track three, The Patient. Unfortunately, it's really hard to do these songs justice. you know, we can only do, I mean, I'm pushing it here with like 2 minutes of the song and we're still not really kicking in. But this is a 7 minute track, 7 minutes and 13 seconds. The Patient, it's track three. The track before it was 1 minute of instrumental, which essentially was just made to listen to leading into this song.
Mm-hmm.
So as you can tell, very drawn out. I'm already sensing it immediately is that the theme of it's an album, you know, you press play and you sit back and you listen to it and all the ambience is making that very, very clear. Now, you know, I imagine another 6 minutes with the song left that we have a lot of variation and it probably kicks in pretty hard at some point, I would say.
Yeah. The one thing, though, that you can tell from just listening to the first, like, 2 minutes of pretty much any Tool song is that you can get a sense of where the tempo is and where it's going to go, even though you don't always know what time signature it's going to be in when it gets there.
That's very true. And something I really enjoy about this track in particular is that while it sounds almost dark and depressing, the way the ambience is, and what I enjoy is that Maynard's, you know, his lyrical, the way he pronounces the words and things like that, his melodic lyrics when he sings is an excellent example of how he can take these lyrics and transform them, because it sounds like, I said, a very, you know, almost sad ambient song. But the lyrics, there's actually part of it says, if there was no desire to heal a damaged and broken man along this tedious path I've chosen here, I certainly would have walked away by now. So the title, The Patient, isn't necessarily like the patient, you know, in the sense that you or I think of as a doctor's patient, but it's more of a learning patience.
Well, I think it's quite obvious, too, with, you know, how long you kind of have to wait through the introductions of the songs, you know, is that learn some patience. It's a 7-minute song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the lyrics are basically just like, things are really crappy right now, but if I'm just patient and I wait it out, everything's going to essentially be okay. But that's not the vibe you get when you come into it. You're like, oh, this is going to be deep, you know?
Well, more patience in the works here. This next song, track 4, is called Mantra. It's another instrumental track coming in at about a minute and 12 seconds, which will be leading us into a really big song off of this album on number 5. But before we get to that, here it is, track 4, Mantra. So there you go. I'll let this keep playing a little bit here while we talk for a second. But essentially, you know, that's what you got. This is kind of instrumental. This is, you know, just kind of trying to prepare you, I think, for the next track. Mm-hmm. It's the whole reason why something like this exists. But, I mean, in reality, this is Tool. Like, what other band puts 1-minute tracks like this on their album in between songs?
Maybe Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, you could say, does that.
So here we are. So we just hit the end of the track. So that's the whole thing it was. It was just kind of a drone.
Yeah. Halloween, haunted house background sound.
Yeah. It was almost kind of spooky, like to build the suspense, to build the anticipation for this next track. And, you know, as you guys, I know you guys love Tool. And as me being someone who doesn't really know a lot of Tool, I know this next song. This song is fantastic. Track 5, Jacob, what's this one called?
This is Schism.
Yeah, and that's where it kicks in right there. So, yeah, even for me, I can tell you right now, that's a freaking kick-ass song. Schism, track 5 on our album review here for Tool. And, yeah, I mean, what is there to say? The bass, the timing, the drums, the energy that it builds. I mean, this is what you think of when you think of Tool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That weird 7-8 time. And the only other thing I have to add to this is that when they announced that they have finally had another album coming out, they released like a bogus title and a bogus list of tracks in an effort to confuse people downloading music on Napster, because Napster was still a thing in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this track actually made it. Or survived on Napster for the longest time under the title of River Christ.
Cool.
That sounds very Tool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, this track was the one that I believe is the one that did best radio-wise. Am I correct in that?
From this album? I think it's the most playable on radio.
Yeah.
By the, you know,
but yeah.
You know, like, it's a really great bathroom song because it's almost 7 minutes. But it also has a long enough intro and intro that you can talk over it.
Mm-hmm.
So this might not have been the top single off the album. I might have to look that up. But it probably got the most play.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the track list here, you know, because like I said, I'm not super educated mm-hmm. with Tool, and this is really the only song I've really heard of. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to play another song here and say, oh, yeah, I know this one too. But Schism is the one that when I look at the track listing, I know that one. You know, I play drums, I play bass, and that bass line, that was always mm-hmm. the thing you wanted to learn was sit down that do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It's so unique. And, you know, that's like just music in general. When you have something that's a perfectly catchy riff and it just catches fire, and that's the thing that really stands out for this song and makes it so popular is definitely that bass part. I don't think anybody would argue that. So, okay. Well, I guess we'll keep moving on here. What is our track six?
This is Parabole.
So, not the best copy of that song we have there. Well, we just, we brought in the CD for the authenticity of it. But
right,
you can tell, the CD we have has gotten fair use out of it, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah, when this came out, I was working for a courier company, and I remember I had a Walkman that I had running through the headphone jack to a cassette tape in a 78 GMC cargo van.
Oh, did you have the disc man sitting in your passenger seat with the skip protection?
And I was always like so upset because this track really leads nicely into the next track.
Mm-hmm.
And that stupid little Walkman would never seamlessly play into the next track.
Parabola are clearly meant to be listened to, you know, as we were saying, it's an album. And so Parabola and Parabola were obviously written to be played in that particular sequence. What I like about Parabola specifically is, A, the way that it's spelled. This album is completely about spirituality. The whole album, all the lyrics are about spirituality and finding yourself and kind of life therapy and things like that, enlightenment. And the way they spell parable is P-A-R-A-B-O-L.
It's just right. Parabola minus the A at the end.
But parable is also a word that's used a lot in the Catholic religion. And you can hear in the beginning the key that he sings in and the sequence of notes are almost hymnal. So you can see a lot of the spiritual references that he's brought in from all the different beliefs that he has. I'm saying he, meaning Maynard as in the songwriter. All the different beliefs that he's pulled from all the different spiritualities that he's researched in his own personal life is very easily heard in the beginning, even of this song.
Yeah, you know, maybe now is a good time to comment on the album artwork. Is this the first time you've seen that, Greg?
Well, now, when I look online, it shows a different picture than what the CD
there,
cover I have on my hand.
There's a slip cover that went...
Yeah.
Okay, so the disc came with a slip cover that goes over the jewel case that had the name of the album and the track listings.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything on the inside doesn't have any words or anything on it. It's just transparencies laid over on top of each other.
That's pretty cool. So I see. So it's when it's wrapped in the package, it says Tool and the album name.
Yeah.
But then when you unwrap it, it's just this clear, unmarked case.
Yeah.
It's, It's got the guy on the front here who, you know, he's holding up. It almost looks like he would be doing sort of a religious symbol with his hand. And it's kind of like the flesh and bone, like a skinless body looking off to the left. And of course, he's surrounded by a bunch of eyes and flames and other kind of psychedelic stuff, too. Mm-hmm. And the case is totally see-through, like you said, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, if I just saw this sitting around, I don't think I would have had any idea what album it was, you know?
Yeah, and the disc itself has like a buzzsaw pattern, kind of like on the outside. Mm-hmm. So when you had the whole thing together, and I've, of course, lost the slipcover years ago. It got destroyed, actually, just kind of came apart on me. But you could hold the thing up to a light or, you know, out in the sun and see all the layers through it. It was a really cool effect. It might be my second favorite album art next to, like, King Crimson's and the Court of the Crimson King just because it's so trippy.
I mean, it's really creative, too.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Well, and the one thing, too, I'm noticing is it looks like when I'm holding it up to the light here, too, is that, I mean, the layers, the way they did it is... like, the person has, like, an aura kind of around them, but that's from the second layer in there. And so it really kind of makes it 3D pop, too, when you do that.
Well, and I guess since nobody listening to this can see it, unless you're looking online, when we're talking about layers, the booklet insert is all transparencies folded in half.
Yeah. So
like a booklet. So you can flip through and see each layer of transparency.
In theory, you could turn to pitch which page you like and then, like, put it back in there and change the album cover, essentially. Because as I flip through here, this guy is basically being peeled away. He's just muscle and veins. And then I flip it, and it's skeletal system. And I flip it again, and it shows, like, his brain and his lungs.
Mm-hmm.
I flip it one last time, and it's, like, a cross-section like you'd see at the... at the like Museum of Science and Industry, where they have like the cross section cut of the person's body. So this is really cool.
Tool has used an artist named Alex Gray for most of their album artwork for years. Alex Gray is an artist who's been around since the early 70s, I believe. And that is very his style of work. He's very, they use him because he's a very spiritual person as well. All of his artwork is very not about the human figure so much as it is about who we are internally.
Mm-hmm.
And so that very much speaks to what you were saying, where you literally, this album is about spirituality and finding yourself. And you're literally peeling away the layers of the person inside the album artwork because the way that Alex Gray has been able to put that art together. And I think that's really important to the album as a whole, too. And just another thing that speaks to how Tool doesn't just cut a record. They make an album.
Well, yeah.
Like everything down to even the artwork is integral to the theme of the record itself.
Yeah. You can really tell that like things were thought out very well. Well, with that being said, we know that the last track was just kind of leading into this next track, so let's get to it. This is number 7, Parabola. Track 7, Parabola. You know, that's exactly what I needed, you guys. I mean, driving rock. That one kicked off hard, and it was very driving, very listenable. Like, you know, because they still did some of the time changes in there, but that was a little more like mainstream. You could get into it very quickly. And that's exactly what I was hoping this track would be like. And it wasn't so... aired out, spaced out. We had the track before it to kind of do that so that when this one kicked in, it kicked in.
Mm-hmm.
Very, and, you know, we only play the first couple of minutes of the song, so it's great to get that energy in while we can, just for the listener's sake, too,
Yeah.
So you're not sitting here thinking that every song is like 2 minutes of ambient noise. Mm-hmm. No. You know, it's pretty, you got to have the patience. So I really liked that track.
What I really love about Parabola is that it's about the same thing as Parable, which is about living in the now. The first line of that song is, "We barely remember who or what came before." And essentially, I read an interview in which Maynard mentioned that this song is about how our memories are so limited and our memories are what give us our sense of self. And so it basically translates to an illusory nature of self, about how you just need to live in the now because life is just what you have made of it in your mind anyway. And so you need to learn to exist outside of what your mind has created and just be here in the moment, which is exactly what Parable was about, but in a completely different way. And it's just beautiful how those two songs have very clearly been written to be akin to each other, but are so different in their stylings and their presentation.
Isn't it amazing how just music in general, and I don't want to get too far off on a tangent, but like just the fact that, you know, if you want to say something, if you have something to say, and if you want to invoke those emotions and feelings, that you can put it into an audio recording like this,
mm-hmm.
and we can sit down and have conversations about how you felt, what it meant. And I mean, it's just a song, but mm-hmm. at the same time, like, it elevates to another level. I mean, some of the stuff you're over here talking about, like the meanings and the lessons to learn from these songs and what they were going for. And I mean, there's a lot you can pull just from a song. And,
I just think
that Tool kind of exemplifies that more than, you know, for example, we did a Me First and the Gimme Gimmes review recently. And, you know, I mean, it's two opposite ends of the spectrum entirely, just to put it simply.
The thing people think, I think that there's a fear of those who've not been exposed to Tool because they seem very, like, they're going to be too deep, too hard to be understood, mm-hmm. too prog rock. Really, they're very musically complicated, as been expressed by their, you know, their syncopation, their timing, as you were saying. But their messages are all very simple messages. You know, what they're trying to get through in their lyrics are very simple and I can't even think of the word, but they're just broad ideas that everybody already has anyway, but they've just taken them and put them into this song. So there is a bit of a thing, you know, like you were saying, I only know Tool by Schism and Sober and, you know, the few songs that have been on the radio. But I think the fear is that people know that the rest of their music is so long and ambient, and there's a fear there of, I'm not going to get it. It's going to be above me. But everything is really, it's very quite simple. It's all feelings that we all as humans have. It's just been composed in such a way that makes it sound more complicated than it really is.
Do you remember when that interview that you were talking about with Maynard, when that was done? No.
I know it was an interview that was shortly after the album, so it must have been...
Well, he must have been feeling really frisky that day, because I remember, like, in the early days of Tool, that Maynard would constantly throw out misinformation in interviews, either to humor himself,
mm-hmm.
or because I also heard him talk, very frankly, in a Rolling Stones article, about how he's like, look, people are going to have their own takeaway from music anyway, so don't expect to... Like,
right.
if I'm going to tell new musicians something, it's don't expect people to understand you, because they're never... Like, people will listen to John Lennon songs and think that he was... you know, advocating war. It's like,
mm-hmm. and it wasn't so much as him coming right out. You're absolutely right. He always very much misdirects interviews just for his own sense of artistry. But in this particular one, it was more along the lines of the interviewer being like, you know, Parable and Parabola, you know, let's talk about those two songs in conjunction with each other because they seem like they're about this. And he did mostly what you said and was just like, well, you're going to interpret it however you want. You know, my intention... You know, our intention as a band was for it to be, you know, interpreted as you will, but this is what we meant. Moving on.
You know, but I mean, looking back at Green Jelly to, you know, Tool, deep emotional meaning, mm-hmm. you know, whatever is coming out of this. And then, you know, you had Green Jelly, which, of course, was like the precursor to Tool. And it was very jokey.
Well, to be fair, I believe Tool's very first album was like 91 or 90, 97, something very, you know, very early. I want to say it was before 97. I want to say it was like 93 or 91, something like that. The very popular album art where it's a wrench with two.
Right. Yeah, with the two nuts on it. And
I was trying to
I remember, I didn't really even know that this was a band. Like I knew Green Jello existed and that I had listened to their albums. And then I kept seeing all these Tool t-shirts walking around.
With that logo.
Yeah, and at first I thought like, oh, well, that's like the new like Spencer's Gifts or something.
Right.
That's got to be like.
Why would you wear a shirt that looks like a
phallic
wrench?
Yeah, because all it said was Tool on it. I thought it was just a brand.
That was a joke, yeah, because it looked like.
Yeah, and I'm like, who are all these people? And then somebody told me, oh, that's a band. And then somebody was like, oh, no, those are the guys from Green Jelly. And I went, oh, okay, mm-hmm. Well, maybe I have to listen to it then.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. Green Jelly was actually a side project of Tool through Maynard and Danny Carey that they did between, because as Tool fans know, it usually takes us about 10 years an album to get
a right? Are they still a band even?
Yeah, they're actually going on tour soon, I hear. And if they come anywhere within like mm-hmm. Bajillion mile radius of me, I'm trying to go.
And we will let you know all about it here on Follow the Sound as well. So, hey, well, let's just keep moving. We're about halfway through our album review here. This is Tool, Lateralis. And so track 8 is our next one. It's called Ticks and Leeches. Dope. That was a dope track right mm-hmm. there. Track 8, Ticks and Leeches. And, you know, I've noticed, because I thought about this with the previous track, Parabola. I thought to myself, you know, it kind of, you can hear some 90s rock influence, because I felt like it was very Smashing Pumpkins-esque okay. on the last track.
Ah!
No, I'm serious, though. I'm totally serious. And on this one, as I'm listening to the track, I mean, well, first off, those drums are mm-hmm. crazy. As a drummer, I have mad appreciation for all the kind of crazy time signatures he's doing, and he's doing basically one giant fill. But I really felt during this one that I could hear like some of those other 90s bands. Like you could almost kind of hear a Primus, you know, parallel to this, and you could feel like, mm-hmm. you know, just some other prominent 90s bands that you could just tell they existed at the same time. Maybe they influenced each other, or maybe that was just kind of the 90s sound, you know? But I do feel like if you ask me what year this came out, I would say, oh, it's probably, you know, 93, 94, 95-ish. And I wouldn't be wrong just because the feel of it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
I think that you would be sliced to death by Tool fans if you told people that they were inspired by the Smashing Pumpkins.
It sounded like any other band out there.
Hey, you know, before he shaved off all his hair and then got really into Jesus and then got kind of weird and then got accusatory with his lyrics that he changed, the Smashing Pumpkins were a pretty damn good band.
Yeah. Billy Corgan and everybody, they were doing great then.
Yeah, well, and you know, in my defense a little bit too, this album came out in 2001, so mm-hmm. the bands I'm talking about, they put out their music before that. So, like, there could potentially be that influence there. And if I'm wrong, then that's okay.
I'll go with you on it. I love living on the edge.
I just can't. I can't get behind Tool being influenced by Smashing Pumpkins. I can get behind Smashing Pumpkins having been influenced by Tool.
Well, but just the wall of sound with the guitar. Mm-hmm. Like, the guitar wall of sound, and when the drums are really heavy and really snappy, I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying that that does kind of have a Smashing Pumpkins feel to it, though, because it is a very
okay. I will definitely go with you on the tonality and whatever distortion effect he's using on that guitar.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Sounding like it came out of Seattle in '93. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And like I said, this came out after that, so I mean, the potential is there, and just don't hurt me. That's all I ask.
What I really like, I know I've been song meaning this whole album.
Yeah,
But Ticks and Leeches is another great one, because it's where Maynard gets you with the title again, because this song, you just listen to it, you don't really give too much thought about the lyrics because the music is so cool, but this song is about negative influences sucking the self out of your spirit, which is why it's called Ticks and Leeches, and I thought that was such a cool... I love how they take the titles of their songs and make them so about the lyrics that you don't even think about it. You're like, Ticks and Leeches, okay, whatever, you know, and then you think about it, you hear the lyrics and you read them and you think, and it's just, oh, about how they suck all of your inner, you know, self out. And when you're trying to, all this negative influence sucking all of yourself out of your spirit. It's just, I love the way that he uses that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that we shut our microphones off when we do this, because I can't not. Like, try and keep time out loud every time I hear this
like
song.
Table drumming really badly.
I'm just sitting there counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
You know, just the entire time just counting. But okay, so mystery solved. We now know that the first Tool album came out in 93. So you can stop the angry tweet right now. I'm looking at you, Carl.
Carl.
Right. And as far as like the drums at the beginning just feeling like a really huge fill, have you ever listened to Clutch?
Oh, yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, the drumming in this is very kind of Gaster drumming, sort of. But the next song coming up needs a little bit of an intro, because this is kind of the one that everyone who has ever read a single article on Tool brings up, because they're like, yeah, did you know that Lateralis' time signature has numbers from the Fibonacci sequence in it? Yeah, which is actually kind of interesting. So, like, the time signature for this song is a time scale, because it's ever changing, and it's 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The whole album is very, well, all of their albums are very mathematical in nature. Mm-hmm. There's no mistake about how well things are very purposefully crafted.
Yeah.
And that's an excellent example of how purposefully they craft all of their songs.
Okay. Well, we'll get that in here in just a second. I will say, though, it's amazing how, like, math really fits into everything around you. And so music comes out of thin air, but when you take the creativeness of music and then you add in real mathematical equations, things that are set in their ways, you know, math is math. It's not, you can't make it up. And so even though it is fixed in its ways and it comes from nature, it can still be kind of beautiful. So here it is, the title track, number 9, Lateralis.
Thank you.
So another killer track there. That part where it kicked in was really badass. That's, of course, the title track from our album review tonight. That is Lateralis from Tool's 2001 release of the same name. And we were talking about the time signature in there. I heard it. I mean, you know, it's got, I can only imagine how many takes it had to record.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, if you're a very talented musician, it's probably not that hard because that's what you do. But at the same time, there's got to be plenty of those moments where, you know, Maynard was listening with headphones and we're like, oh, nope, you got off the time there. It was supposed to go 1, 2, 5, 1, 8, you know, and you did 2, 4, 8. 7, and you know, so that's kind of a question I wonder is, you know, how much confusion was there when they were writing this song and when they were recording it, and how many takes did, you know, did that actually happen? But badass song. I mean, when it kicked in, that guitar was crisp and it just rung out. So I think I'm a fan of this one.
Yeah, it's that time signature is so specific there. I don't think there's a whole lot more you can do with it than that. I would love to hear people play around with it, but I think it's a really good thing that they ditch it partway into the song and then come back to it and then ditch it again.
It would be almost an impossibility to maintain it through the entire song and have it be an actual. I mean, they already pushed the envelope as far as ambience goes, and I think if you tried to maintain that time signature throughout the entire song, we would have lost
it. Well, and for nearly 10 minutes, you know, to be specific. I mean, 9:24 is the time on this, so I mean, a 10-minute song that would have been all over the place, is it listenable? Would it be? I mean, it would be listenable, but would it be 10 minutes listenable? So, yeah. So, I mean, but the way that it ended up coming out, I think, was the best possible solution for the band, and it was the title track for the album. So do you have any kind of the behind the scenes on this one, Lady Scratch?
Well, Lateralis actually is one of the more popular songs in the Tool fan base. There's a line at the very end of the song that says spiral out. Tool fans have kind of clung to that particular phrase, and I think a lot of misconceptions about Tool fans. That's not like, you know, this album is really ambient and you should just get high and spiral out and listen to the record, man. They mean spiral out in a lateral human way. Spiral out, he says, you know, black and white was all I see in my infancy, then red and yellow came to me, meaning that I started out very basic, but as I laterally expanded myself as a human and spiraled out, more things came into my mind and I was able to understand more about life. And so a lot of Tool fans have, like I said, clung to that between the artwork of Alex Gray and the lines, things like spiral out, really raised Tool to that level of being more of a philosophical band as opposed to the, you know, the band that people, you know, think let's turn this on and smoke some weed type thing would people infer from spiral out. Am I accurate in trying to explain that, Jacob?
Yeah, I suppose. I kind of always assumed it was actually a reference to the Fibonacci sequence itself.
It is, especially.
Because there's you can, from the Fibonacci sequence, you can use it to create blocks and then attach the corners of the blocks to create a spiral that is constantly, many Christmas. When things expand and expoundatory, it doesn't matter. Point is that it's a spiral that has a constant expansion at an increasing rate. There's a word for this in maths that I am completely not in my brain.
In maths. Well, we're not a math podcast.
Yeah, no, we're not.
We picked the wrong band to be bad at the maths, but essentially, yeah, the album, this particular track.
I only say maths whenever I completely screw it up because
I'm trying to
sound British and lend more credence to my fouls, my foul failings.
What was the name of the spiral?
Fibonacci.
Fibonacci spiral.
It's also well known in the art world. I don't know if you recall one time Greg and I went to the St. Louis Art Museum, and I was trying to explain the Fibonacci spiral to him about how in the perfect photograph or the perfect
portrait, what you're talking about.
You know, about how the points of sight in the Fibonacci spiral can be placed directly on artwork and make it more aesthetically pleasing, and that same thing applies here musically.
Exactly, because what you're talking about too is like when people say what is like a perfect Renaissance painting, because it's got like all the elements and there's people that'll be in it and they're kind of gesturing in a certain direction and it keeps your vision spiraling around the picture. It's funny because you can even apply this to most recently, somebody showed, there's a picture of Justin Bieber getting choked out at a club by a guy. He's got him by the throat. And, you know, on Facebook, people were joking, doesn't this look like a classic Renaissance picture? Because it does, because the man's arm grabbing him by the throat is part of it. And then the people around are all like not paying attention to what's happening. But all of their gestures, it looks like a classic Renaissance painting somehow, some way. And it's because of the spiral that does that. Mm-hmm. So it's just amazing, once again, seeing how you can take the science, you can take the math, and you can incorporate it with music, and you come up with what turns out to be like one of, you know, a huge band with a huge following. It's not like this was, you know, they gave it a shot because the formula was there and it just turned out how it does.
Mm-hmm.
They made it work. So, all right, well, let's keep flying through here, shall we? We got track 10 up next. This one's called Disposition. That is definitely a slow burner right there.
I love the harmonics there at the beginning, and I desperately want to know what instruments those were recorded on.
Yeah, that's track 10, Disposition, on our album review here of Tool.
Yeah, I think this song really shows Maynard's intention to reach Pink Floyd levels of ambience and and modernize it in such a way. Disposition is actually the beginning of what's a three-part piece. It's a three-part movement with the next two songs. So you may be able to hear in the next track the way the three flow together. But again, he's just really going for this level of ambience that wasn't really around in the early aughts. Right around then, we had a lot of the rock artists were very like the new metal was what was popular, right? You know, the Limp Bizkits and the Korns and things like that. So for a track that had all these rock elements and then to have a three-part movement at the end of it like this is almost unheard of. And yet it still maintained such a high level of artistry and did so well for itself. But this is, I really feel like Lateralis is the one of the best albums that Tool's come out with. And this is kind of brings it out so beautifully.
Well, then we can get into part two of our three-part deal here with track 11, Reflection.
Thank you.
Gosh, you know, it's really such a shame. This is an 11-minute track, and we obviously can't play all 11 minutes for you right now. I mean, we could, but it's not really the purpose of this podcast here. So there you are. That's track 11, Reflection. Like I said, 11 minutes long. You guys, what happens in the other 9 minutes of this song?
You know, it really doesn't go a whole... It doesn't stray that much from that.
Really doesn't.
No.
No. It's again, it's just part of a three-piece movement. This is the second piece in a three-piece movement is usually just the one that kind of... if you close your eyes and listen to this track, it's very easy to kind of zen out and just find your center, which I think is, again, the whole album being so spiritual is what his intention was for the end of the album. Is so that, you know, once you've listened and you've heard all the lessons, is now the part where we complete our meditation and we bring it all
down.
Yeah,
yeah, I can definitely get that because, like, you know, we played probably about 2 minutes there at the beginning of the song. And, of course, you heard the drums just kind of playing around. You heard the bass, which I love it when bass players play chords. You know, they're playing more than one string at a time on the bass, which he was just kind of doing it the whole time seamlessly. But yeah, right before we started kind of cutting it off there too, you heard like a sitar coming in. And it definitely, you know, for those of you, just a refresher, the sitar, of course, is the Indian instrument. It kind of looks like a guitar, but it makes that very kind of, I would say, kind of curved note sounds, if you will, kind of like, but it's very, you hear it in Indian music quite a bit as well. And in psychedelic music, it's very popular as well, because it does have a very kind of, you know, wobbly psychedelic sound to it. So yeah, I totally get, I mean, it's called Reflection. It's 11 minutes long and it sounds like that. It definitely sounds like a moment of meditation to just close your eyes
or
and relax.
Good music to just smoke a cigar with.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too, is there's always like the drug culture underlying tones.
He said a cigar.
Well, I know he said a cigar.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, tobacco is, I mean, to you, it's just a smoke, but to some people, it's religion.
It's not like you're standing in Sunshine Daydream right now and you're like, excuse me, could I view that tobacco pipe, please? You know, using the terminology. I mean, it's, you know, it's not, you can admit it without being in the culture that, yes, there's definitely a drug culture that goes along with this music, you know? Psychedelics, especially, I think, is the big thing. And, you know, it's something we haven't really mentioned too much. But it's just one of those where if that's your personality, if that's your lifestyle, then this is probably a good soundtrack to accompany it. And even if you're not into those kind of things, you can still close your eyes and just let the music wash over you, you know, and you don't have to be in an altered state of mind to appreciate it. But at the same time, I bet you if you were and you put this album on, you'd probably have a whole nother experience and it would have a whole nother meaning to you as well.
It probably would, but I don't know. It's almost blasphemous to relate this album, particularly of Tools, to a drug culture because I mean, the whole thing is about spirituality and like searching within your mind to find who you are and altering your state of mind upon listening to it's going to potentially skew your interpretation of what they meant with the album. I mean, not to disagree with the fact that it probably be a good album to do that to.
Well,
I won't disagree, but I do think that's it's not the intent of the album, and it almost is, like I said, blasphemous to say that it would be the intent of the album, which I know is not what you were saying, but...
Well, yeah, and I'm not trying to be offensive to any Tool fans out there, but, you know, when you talk about spirituality versus modern-day drug culture, you know, there is a fine line there. There's a fine line because sometimes people kind of get their spirituality from those type of things.
Well, sure.
And, you know, I think another thing, too, and like I said, I don't mean any offense by this, but, you know, for somebody like me who grew up aware of Tool, but not in the Tool fan base and actively searching it out, I think to an extent there always kind of was maybe that thought that, like, you know, what is this music? What is it for? Who is it for? And, you know, it's an acquired taste. So,
I mean, I'm personally friends with a traveling psychedelic witch / author, and he gets a lot of his inspiration.
I know who you're talking about.
I know you do. He gets a lot of his inspiration from using psychedelic drugs, but he also has a very deep, thoughtful, meaningful writing style. And his depth is just incredible. And he gets that from being able to expand his mind through using different kinds of psychedelics. So I'm not going to discount the fact that that does certainly help some people in their artistry. I just think with given the whole idea of this record's thought process isn't...
Well, the guy you're talking about, he is a very insightful person. He's very wise. He's very smart. And it's not like he's somebody who, you know, is like, oh, my gosh, like, here's a drug user coming our way. I mean, he's like a brilliant. I mean, he's a professor.
Not a burnout.
He's got a Ph.D.
He's not a burnout. He's not somebody who's out, you know, living in the woods wearing a loincloth licking toads. He's like a So, intelligent man.
So I guess we can just kind of leave it as we go on to our part three of our thing, and we can just say that, you know, there's a lot of different cultures and they can all appreciate this music.
Yes.
And don't judge a book by its cover, because that's what I did when I was in high school. Is I judged Tool, and you know, I am learning a different world, and I'm glad that you guys are here to kind of enlighten me as well. So
it's all about enlightenment. The whole record.
Yeah, I know. I'm really zenning out over here. So we got two tracks to go. This next one is, as Lady Scratch put it, basically kind of part three of this little three tracks in a row on the album. So this one's called Triad, and it's instrumental. So here it goes. A lot of energy coming from those guitars there. You can just feel that they're building up to something huge. You just feel
well,
it.
Well, have I got a surprise for you? We'll talk about the next track in a minute.
The masters of suspense here. Jeez, come on. So that was track 12. And is it Triad or is it Triad?
I think it's Triad.
Triad? It's T-R-I-A-D. And... you know, they don't. The song doesn't have any lyrics. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would tell you. You know, I would listen to it and be like, "Oh, yeah." But nonetheless, though, you were saying, Bree, that Lady Scratch. Oops,
you've unmasked me.
Lady Scratch. You were saying that was like part three, kind of our of these three last tracks in a row to tell a little bit of a story. And what story are we getting from this track?
Again, I think it's just, as I was saying earlier, I think that we've been given a lot of spiritual lessons from Tool through the album. Things about looking inward, about spiraling outward, about not letting negativity affect your life, about thinking for yourself, about not being a sheeple, which I think is what's so interesting about this next track and why it is what it is. But yeah, I think the main part of it is this, as we were saying, the vastness and the ambience of how they are as musicians. They just wanted to wrap up the album with this bit of Zen-like meditation so that you can take everything you've learned, apply it, sit here, think it through, and then finish the album almost as if it's been a therapy session for you.
Yeah. Anything else to add there, Jake?
No.
No? Okay. All right. Well, then, Lady Scratch, why don't you bring us into our final track, track 13 here on the album?
Track 13 is called Fayip de Owayed, which is actually an old Enochian language, and it means voices of God.
Wow. Great. So this will be our final track on our album review today. Thank you so much for hanging out with us, both of our guests. Of course, we're really grateful to have Lady Scratch come in and join us. You have provided a lot of great insight.
Thank you.
And so I'm looking forward. Here it is, our final track on our review. This is track 13. And it would help if I queued up the right song here. So here we go. This one's clocking in at about 2 minutes and 39 seconds. And that's it. That's the end of the album there.
Is that the whole song?
Yeah, that's the whole song. That was it.
Okay. Because I want to say the background of this song, we hear only instrumentals, but I'm almost 150% positive here that the background of this song has a 911 call that is actually interwoven kind of in a play the record backwards and you'll hear it type way. I'm not sure if that's how you hear it. But there is a 911 call that is somehow worked within the instrumentals of this of this piece here. And the 911 call is actually a guy, and he's like, I'm a former employee of Area 51. I don't really know where to start. And it's just very intense. You kind of have to do some research and digging to be able to figure out how you can actually hear the call. But that's why I said, do I have a surprise for you? Because they end this with such a driving. We've gone through all this ambience and we've recentered. We found our chi. We're good here. And now we've got this like, we're going to end it and not let you forget that we're Tool the Rock Band. And we're going to cap it, you know, just the way you want it capped, by starting with the grudge and ending with something, you know, a cap of another rock song. But what you don't know is this is an example of Maynard's you know, wise ass, I'll get you back kind of humor.
Yeah.
Where he's like, now we've just educated you on how to think for yourself and don't be sheeple. And then he integrates this 911 call about things such as extraterrestrial beliefs in Area 51 and conspiracy theorists and things like that. And so I think it's really cool that once he's educated you on how to be your own person, he brings it back to, now don't forget what I've just taught you, my children. You know, don't be a sheeple. Don't believe everything you hear. You know, make sure that you're thinking for yourself and don't let the world and the government and things like that tell you what you should be thinking and feeling.
So we've got the moral of the story here at the end of the album. Wow.
Yeah, I think that's probably why this is like my favorite album from Tool, is because of just the craziness. I mean, it really sounds like they invited or consulted Tom Waits as a producer on a lot of these things. Because somewhere in the album, I forget where it is, but there's Maynard's cat.
Yeah.
like they sampled some sound out of his cat. It might not have even been a noise the cat was making. It might have been a noise they made with the cat.
Yeah.
Does that make, I don't know, like
as opposed to the cat meowing, it was like.
Right, it could be like the sound of its fur getting rubbed against the jewel mic, case from the CD or something. You don't know. But I do remember reading, but then again, that could have been complete bullshit.
Knowing Maynard, it could have very well been bullshit.
Yeah, now that I think about it. So
you could have been, oh, that sound, that was my cat.
So in addition to the sound that Tool creates, not only that, but then they also have so much mystery just surrounding every single aspect of the band, too. And it's just, you know, I mean, it's one thing to be like, okay, we're going to do an interview, you know, because some bands might be so secretive that they don't even do press at all. But then not only that, but then they do the press and they purposefully mislead you and creates more question marks and mysteries than it even does answers. So, okay, well, that's the final of our review. And now it's time for us to figure out where this ranks in the world of music.
Oh, gosh.
I know. So I guess I can start and give you guys a second to formulate an answer here. But as somebody who this is the first time I've listened through the full album, my initial thoughts, there is a lot of patience needed, a lot of ambience. This definitely would have to be an album. If it was going to be in my car, I would have to be on a long road trip, not really focusing on it. And if I was at home, it would be like me, like either just relaxing, like not touching and skipping tracks, but just letting it play, you know, or like maybe doing some chores or something. But you know, I'm a little bit ADD, and so it does kind of rub me the wrong way just a hair. And I don't want to be blasphemous because it's great music. I think it is great music. So I will probably give it. See, I can't rank it higher than some other albums that I liked in the past. That's the problem. So right, I'm going to have to give this like, oh, it's going to be so low, you guys are going to hate me, but I'm going to have to probably give it a 6, just because if I give it a 7, I'll say that it's better than some other albums that I really like. So I'm going to give it a 6 only because I should give it a 7. And that's just me. What about you, Jake?
Oh, I mean, you can hear, like, okay, so this was my CD that I brought in. And you can hear how often I've listened to it because it's scratched and some of the tracks are skipping a little bit. And I guess I could have bought a new one to bring in, but hey, you know. So, yeah, I guess I just have the patience of a thousand wise souls, because when I was a courier, like, I would stop in a place and run in and come back and catch like the last 20 seconds of a track and just leave it playing, and it didn't bother me. This is one of my favorite albums of all time. It's like it's an easy 10 for me.
Easy 10.
It really is.
Excellent. See, well, I will say the musicianship is probably an easy 10 as well. And so I do want to mention that I do appreciate Tool. It's just, you know, the album moves a little slow for my punk rock pace. I like fast music. And so this is kind of out of my element. How about you, Lady Scratch?
I think that this particular album, subjectively speaking, I'm gonna give it a 9. I think that this album was really a very high point for Tool. We started out with Anima, which is a good, you know, hard building rock, and it was a good establishment to who they are as a band. And then they came out with, you know, the more instrumental 10,000 Days, and I just think that this middle one here, and I know there were other works between, but this particular middle between those two albums was really, you could see the evolution of the band. I think this is an excellent representation of how the band has evolved and what they're about. So I'm gonna give it a 9. It's not my favorite album of all time because, Greg, I'm kind of with you on this. I can't go through that whole 3-part movement by myself unless I'm going to be on a road trip and I don't have to pay too much attention to the road and I can focus on the music or something.
And that's the thing because, I mean, yeah, when we were looking at it, 9-minute song, 11-minute song, 5-minute song. So add all those up for that 3-part movement. Mm-hmm. I mean, you need to have time to invest just to listen and appreciate it in the first place. The whole album itself, mind you, the whole album itself is 78 minutes, 51 seconds. So well over an hour of music. The last album review we did, the album didn't even make it 30 minutes. So, I mean, this is 3 times another album with the same number of tracks on it that we've done before.
That being said, if you've ever been to a Tool show, you've ever been to a Tool concert, and you've seen the way that they bring the audio and integrate all of the lighting and the fog and the everything that they do at their shows, the Alex Gray artwork in the background and things like that, and you can see how they really bring it as an art piece together, I think that really says something, though. I think that really adds to me ranking it as high as I do is because I've seen it live. You know, going to see Me First and the Gimme Gimmes live is a lot of fun, and it's going to be, you know, a 30-minute album, but you're going to enjoy every moment of it. But when you go to a show like a Tool show where it's going to be an hour and a half, 2-hour long show because we have 11 minutes of ambient noise, it doesn't seem like 11 minutes of ambient noise the way that they present it as an art piece.
Yeah. Well, and you know, of course, they'll have like the light show and stuff going with it too live. And the light show, especially with music like this, is half the performance is just seeing it all coordinate together. So, well, great stuff. And so another album in the books. Today's review is Lateral. I keep doing that. Lateralis. Gregory, come on. Lateralis by Tool, released in 2001. That is our album for today. And this has been a presentation of Follow the Sound. If you want to find more podcasts from us, go to followthesoundpodcast.com. You can find all of our album reviews, This Week in Music History, plus more stuff to tickle your music ear fancy. Of course, we're missing our fearless leader, Brian Kroc. Normally, he's in here with us, but nonetheless, I think we made it pretty well. So I was your host today, Greg Harvey, joined, as always, Jacob Crum.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And of course, our good friend, St. Louis's own Lady Scratch.
I brought cookies.
And she did bring cookies. She brought in some snickerdoodles that we were eating between while the songs were playing. So anyways, find more of our stuff, like I said, at followthesoundpodcast.com. And while you're at it, if you want to help us out a little bit, we'd appreciate it. Once you get to the website, followthesoundpodcast.com, there will be a little Amazon banner. If you do shopping on Amazon, go ahead and just go through our website, click the Amazon banner, and then do your regular shopping. It doesn't cost you a dime extra to do it that way. The only difference, though, is that we get a little bit of a referral bonus, basically, you know, because you went through our website to go on Amazon. So if you just want to buy your regular purchases and help us out a little bit at the same time, it'd be greatly appreciated. Big thanks as well to lineupmedia.fm, our parent company that allows us to do this podcast. You can check out lineupmedia.fm and see all the other great podcasts available from them as well. And with that being said, from all of us here at Follow the Sound, remember, if you hear it, follow the sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.